You're listening to the More Than the Music podcast, episode 55, featuring Christine DeMarco from Bethel Music.
I ended up struggling with a lot of panic attacks. One morning I woke up and I was fed up with it. I put my shoes on and right behind the house is like the way up Twin Peaks. I start running and I was mad. Oh, I was so mad. It's like late October. I look over and there's this little pumpkin just sitting outside somebody's house on their doorstep, and I just grab it. But I get up to the top and I start smashing, obliterating this pumpkin, and I'm slamming it down and I'm just like quoting promises that are over my life. Like, I can do all things through Christ.
You're about to hear how smashing a pumpkin helped Christine overcome anxiety, why she was surprised the first time she had to sing in church, the strange thing she once found in a roommate's refrigerator, and what song on Starlight was inspired by the Chronicles of Narnia. I'm Justin Paul, along with Christine DeMarco from Bethel Music, and we're going to talk about a lot more than just the music.
More Than the Music is hosted by Justin Paul, a touring musician turned national radio personality who loves the dramatic, humorous, sometimes tragic, and often inspiring story behind the songs from your favorite artists. You can connect with the show at wayfm.com/Justin. Now here's your host, Justin Paul.
I am so excited today to be joined on the More Than the Music podcast by Miss Christine DeMarco. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks for joining me. We're going to talk about the songs from Bethel Music Starlight. Plus, you've got some new music coming out. Actually, it's already out right now. We're going to talk about that too. But before we jump into the music, let's go back to how this whole thing began for you. You grew up in church, started singing in church, and then new worship leader came to your church, and that's really where it took off for you, right?
Yeah, I was the piano player. So when I was 13 years old, I just started learning piano, and my pastor actually had me stand next to his wife during worship service and just watch her play the piano.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah,
that I could learn. So I'm the awkward person standing over the keyboard just watching.
I was a drummer, and I did that with a drummer too.
Did you do that?
Yeah.
I don't know why they thought that would help me, but I thought it's kind of funny. But I had this worship leader come on staff. His name was Joe Miller. And he immediately saw something in me that I just didn't see. And he put me as his piano player. So he made me his piano player. And very shortly after, he put a mic in front of my face and said, "Well, you're singing. You're singing today." Because somebody didn't show up. That was his reasoning. Somebody didn't show up, so you're going to lead all of our songs.
And you'd never done that?
No, not in public.
Yeah.
I definitely sang in front of a mirror or two, but not in public.
Yeah. Before he threw you on the piano, had you been taking lessons and stuff? Obviously, that wasn't just like spur of the moment.
No, that wasn't spur of the
moment. Figure it out.
I had been playing piano at that point for 2 years. So I had a piano at home and my mom taught me chords. And so I just would read chord music from church, basically bring it home and play it for hours and hours.
Did you know like at that moment that this is what you wanted to do? Or did that just kind of grow out of that?
I always wanted to sing since I was about 5 years old. I'm listening to Sandy Patty Christmas album. I just wanted, I know, but we have these point of references from our childhood, but that was something that I'm like, I want to sing. But at that moment, I was absolutely terrified. I'm this terrified 15-year-old, you know, who is so worried about what people think of her and so worried about, do I sound good? Do I not sound good? And so it was my first time just leading. And I remember getting off the stage that day and needing so much encouragement, and I got it, which was really awesome. I had a couple people come up to me and just say, "You did so, so well." And that's all I needed as a 15-year-old to continue on the path.
That wasn't mom or dad, right?
No, it wasn't my mom.
Because they have to say
those things.
You have
the sweetest voice.
Yeah. And then, like, you just kind of kept singing and growing and growing. And then how did you end up in Reading and at Bethel? There were a few stops along the way before that, right?
Yeah, there was. Actually, right out of high school, I went to IHOP Kansas City for 6 months. I did an internship.
That's not the pancake place.
No, it's not the pancake place. This is that International House of Prayer. And I did 6 months there. I was on the worship teams there, and it's basically a worship service that never stops. It goes 24/7, and you transition flawlessly with the next team after 2 hours.
Really?
Yeah, it's been going for, 13 years now, about? Maybe, actually, way more than that.
I've heard of it, but I literally didn't know it went 24
yeah,
hours all day, every day.
24 hours a day, music never stops, and they pray while they're worshiping. It's pretty amazing. It's it changed my life.
So how long are you singing at a time at one of those events?
Well, I was a part of a team, and we would take 2-hour sets.
Okay.
And we'd sing through the Bible. We'd sing while people prayed. And it really actually taught me how to do spontaneous singing, because someone would get up there and they'd pray, and then we'd sing out what they were praying. And sometimes we'd just repeat what they were saying, but through song.
Yeah.
To kind of engage the whole room. And it really worked. It's like, if you want people to agree in prayer and say the same thing, through worship is a great avenue.
There are even some spontaneous songs on this Starlight album,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
I grew up in a Pentecostal church, so we kind of did a lot of that, you know, regardless. Totally. And we would have 3-hour services. So I was, I was used to that. But if you've never been a part of like a spontaneous worship set, I guess it is a little different than like a structured, okay, we're going to sing 3 hymns and then we're done, right?
Yeah. I can see how it feels awkward at first, for sure. And I started at the basics, which was just singing the Bible or singing what somebody was praying. I mean, you can look at the Bible, even especially in the Psalms. Mm-hmm. Those are all written as songs.
Yep.
So they're actually pretty easy to sing out. Now, we try to stay away from like the Psalms that are, you know, dashing people's heads on rocks and stuff. So we try to stay away from those. We don't sing those out or anything. You know, we try to keep it uplifting.
I mean, I think that would be interesting.
Yeah. You know,
I mean,
it could be very
biblical.
Right.
It is.
They
biblical.
Can't fault us for that. Yeah.
So there was a stop in San Francisco. And I've heard there were some pretty funny stories that happened while you were in San Francisco with a particular ministry.
Mm-hmm. Out of the IHOP ministry, I joined up with another ministry who let plants houses of prayer. And I was in D.C. for a while, and they wanted to plant a house of prayer in San Francisco. So we moved to Haight Street. So basically, I lived right next to the Amoeba Records that's on the top of Haight Street in San Francisco. I lived over a tobacco store and a coffee shop, and both of those smells would just come through the floorboards. You know, it was a very old, rundown flat, and there was 9 bedrooms in this flat. And our ministry rented 2 rooms in this house, and it was the girls' room, the guys' room. It was a huge flat, but wasn't wide open. So there's just narrow hallways everywhere and doors. And so I just, I'll never forget, like, just going with my towel to go use the one shower that we had. And there'd be like a door just popping open in the middle of the hallway and somebody coming out, you know, and you thought that was a closet. You know, but it probably is a closet.
I didn't know a person could fit in there.
It's really expensive to live in San Francisco. So people live in closets. But I mean, are you squeamish? Do you get grossed out easily?
No, I'm able to watch that pimple doctor on YouTube.
Okay, all right, then this will be fine for you.
Okay.
So I was in charge of, our team is in charge of cleaning the kitchen of this house. Okay, it wasn't a very clean house. So we're scrubbing the kitchen and they're like, Christine, why don't you clean out the fridge? There was 2 refrigerators.
Oh, no.
And I'm cleaning out the one in the back pantry. So I'm just taking out old looking chicken and just pulling it all out. And the house mother, her name was Tessa, and she had this rainbow dreadlocks out of one side of her head and a swordfish tattooed on the other side of her head. And she loved Jesus and she was super awesome. She's watching me and I'm pulling out this huge Tupperware container. And I turn to Tessa and I say, hey, can I throw this away? Because to me, it looked like raspberries. And I didn't open it. I just looked at it. And she's like, oh, no, you can't throw that away. And I say, well, why not? She's like, well, it's a placenta.
Okay. Why was that in the fridge?
So apparently there was this couple that lived there, and when every time they had a child, they would plant a tree over it. They would put it in the ground and then plant a tree over it. So me, not knowing anything about the culture of San Francisco or hippie culture whatsoever, I'm freaked out entirely.
That's weird.
That I'm holding in my hand in this Tupperware container. I know. So 20-year-old Christine DeMarco cleaning out just a fridge, not expecting that. I thought maybe, you know, maybe some old stuff.
Did they eventually plant the tree? Did it stay in the fridge forever?
Well, apparently she mailed it back to them.
I
don't even know how that you can mail something like that, but yes.
USPS accept placentas.
So I don't know what you want to do with that story.
That's completely gross and awesome all at the same time. did that lead to a song? It'd be really cool. You'd pull that in back with spontaneous worship.
And then I wrote this song about the Lord being
there before
birth. Your
spontaneous worship next time includes a placenta. Yeah.
Jeremiah 29:11.
Plant a tree. There's something we can figure out some way to make it into a song.
Okay, yeah,
we will. I just wrote your next hit song for you.
I believe you have. Mm-hmm. There's honestly countless stories from that time in my life. But one thing that, it's not exactly funny, but just I ended up struggling with a lot of panic attacks during that time. Just a ton of fear and panic attacks. And Take Courage kind of came from that place. It really was, I believe, birthed in that time in my life. And so,
no pun intended.
Yeah, no pun intended. Wow, I just connected everything.
You
right
did.
There.
You did it. Good job.
Doing my job. Okay. So, I was struggling with fear, struggling with panic, and all that stuff. There was these moments I would wake up in the morning and immediately feel fear just on me, just to start the day. Great, you know, I'm struggling with a panic attack. And one morning I woke up and I felt it, and I was fed up with it. It was kind of this anger rose up in me, like, you do not run my life, fear, you know, and my anger started overpowering my fear. And I know people say joy does that too. Okay, I get it. But like, I needed to get angry at what was happening. And so I put my shoes on, and right behind the house is like the way up Twin Peaks. It's these like two little kind of mountains in San Francisco. And I put my shoes on. I'm start running because I've been a runner since I was in eighth grade. So I just start, I'm going to run up Twin Peaks, 35 minutes, you know, all straight up.
Is that how you like de-stress? You just run?
Yeah, I would run.
And that stresses me out. That's crazy.
It actually is really good for you to have physical activity when you're struggling with fear and panic attacks, because there's so much adrenaline running through your body. It needs to go somewhere. And so I just took off running up this hill. And I was mad. Oh, I was so, so mad. I was like, the enemy cannot steal my joy. The enemy cannot steal my destiny, and he will not win, you know? And I look, it's like late October. I look over and there's this little pumpkin just sitting outside somebody's house on their doorstep. Because when you run uphill in San Francisco, you're running through neighborhoods. Hmm. And I look at that pumpkin and I just grab it in like a moment. I just grab it. And I'm like, you're mine now, you know? And I'm just running up. So if anybody drove by, they'd see this girl running up Twin Peaks with a pumpkin in her hand. Just this beautifully carved pumpkin that somebody worked really, really hard on.
Was this before or after Halloween? Like, was
this
the pumpkin?
This was before.
Man.
I know, I robbed
you
somebody.
You stole somebody's jack-o'-lantern.
If you're out there, I'm so sorry. So I got all the way up to Twin Peaks. I didn't run the whole way, as angry as I was. It was too hard. But I get up to the top. And I start smashing, obliterating this pumpkin. And I'm like over my head and slamming it down on these big rocks that are up there. I'm slamming it down and I'm just like quoting promises that are over my life. Like, I could do all things through Christ.
Angry worship.
Yeah, angry worship leader at that time. And I just, this little pumpkin that some kid took the time to carve out just blew up into a million pieces up in Twin Peaks. All that to say, it was really pivotal in my life to kind of take back control of something. I was about to just lay down and die and let fear kind of take over and become like this very, very afraid person. And I just made a choice to submit to what God had spoken over my life and choose to believe in what he said versus what fear was saying to me every single day. And that's really, I believe, where Take Courage was initially birthed.
Yeah. I heard there also was kind of a connection with the Chronicles of Narnia with this song, too. Is that true?
Mm-hmm, that is true.
A smashing pumpkin story and the Chronicles of Narnia.
Oh, yeah. It's
led to Take Courage.
Just such a broad pull from my creative process. But the pumpkin story was from 2006. Okay. And so I always talk about Take Courage as this kind of wrap up of 10 years of my life, kind of what God taught me in these 10 years. And so it was in, I'm going to say, 2015, the end of 2015. I'm leading worship for school. It's our ministry school in Bethel, Reading. And I start leading, and I hear this phrase pop into my head, courage, dear heart, you know, from when I think it's Aslan, he's talking to Lucy. And I'm like, why am I hearing this phrase? So I just start singing out take courage, my heart, stay steadfast, my soul. And without even thinking, I just start singing, He's in the Waiting. So it's almost as if these words just kind of fell out of my mouth and bypassed my mind to the point where I had to kind of think about it. Is this even right? Is this, yeah. this is a good thing? Should I keep singing this? I'm like, yeah, this is good. So I kept singing this chorus, we call it, over and over and over again. And it became this song, and everybody in the room at that moment grabbed onto it. And I realized everybody that I know or have ever come in contact with is waiting for something. Mm-hmm. It's like you're in the in-between. Even if you're in the midst of tons of promises fulfilled, there's always something that you have to trust the Lord on.
Yeah.
You're kind of in what you'd call the waiting. But to this revelation of the fact that He's not just at the arriving, you know, and He's not at the beginning. Although He is those places, He walks with you through the waiting to get to the arriving. You know?
Yeah.
And so that chorus I took to Jeremy Riddle, and he helped me build this song around it. And he pulled out a lot of stuff in me. I remember saying, I want to sing Watch Your Triumph Unfold. Can I sing that? He's like, I don't know. There's a lot of, you know, how do we make that singable? And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to try it one Sunday. And I started singing Watch Your Triumph Unfold. And people grabbed onto that thought of stand still, watch your triumph unfold, that thought, mm-hmm. which comes from the story of Jehoshaphat in the Bible. I was reading that story primarily because we were going through this really long wait and waiting for our house to close. I know it sounds really funny, but
I've been there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the most stressful times I've ever experienced, just waiting on this thing. And I was reading through the story of Jehoshaphat in the Bible about while I was going through this. And the main thing is stand still. You will not have to fight in this battle. Stand still. Watch the salvation of the Lord. And so that watch your triumph unfold, that phrase really comes from that story and waiting for my house to close,
yeah.
to be honest. So.
A lot of times in that waiting process, no matter what it is, a house or something you're going through, like it seems like sometimes at least you don't hear from God in those moments.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, God, where are you? Like, I want answers now. You know, we're such a now generation. But
yeah.
I think that's where the stillness has to come in, at least for us, mm-hmm. because He speaks in a small, still voice. So sometimes I think we try to do so much in that waiting period because we don't necessarily hear Him all the time
yeah.
in that waiting process.
It's true. It's silence. It's
yeah.
this mystery. It's a very mysterious place, you know, where you have to kind of wrestle with, do I believe what God said? Do I really believe that He is who He says He is and that I am who He says I am and that this is what He said?
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have to go through all of this wrestling. And I found myself at the end of that specific process, that 10 years, that all this doubt that I had carried for so long was just squeezed out of me. When I got to that place of, I guess you could say, arriving in that area, I saw all the stuff I had left behind in the
yeah.
waiting. And it was stuff that would have really prevented me from being successful today.
Yeah. We don't think we need that process. Like, so
well, nobody
often.
Wants it.
Nobody
like,
wants it.
Please give me
yeah, right?
this process.
But
yeah.
His ways are so much higher that, you know, He mm-hmm. knows that even though it's going to suck for us, like that waiting process is just, it's necessary for so many things in our life that we deal with.
Yeah. I'm so very thankful. I'm still waiting for things. I don't know if that ever will go away because
yeah.
it is this beautiful opportunity to trust the Lord. And I'm as strong as what I trust, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's this beautiful place that like I didn't enjoy really being in, but I see people struggling, like even like people waiting to have children that can't have children, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, I have this promise that God said I would have children. And they find themselves in this really like mysterious place where they're wrestling with what God said, but what they see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my friend Josh Baldwin, he has this song called Abraham. And the very first phrase in the song, there's a mountain in between what you said and what I see. And it's just this beautiful description of like, this is what happens to us sometimes.
Yeah.
There's this huge mountain in between what you said and what I see. God, like, I want that to be reconciled, you know?
Yeah. And we're so impatient. Like, we want it now. Mm-hmm. God, you said the mountain would move. Would you just hurry up and move
really
it?
It's really true.
Right?
Patience is something that I think is undervalued today.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read even in Hebrews 10 specifically, where it says you are in need of endurance so that having received the promise, you may attain mm-hmm. it or I'm totally butchering that verse. I'm so sorry. I do love the Bible.
I sing it all the time.
Yeah, but just the fact that Paul's saying, like, you have need of endurance.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I need to develop that strength in my life, that I'm not going to be one who shrinks back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hebrews 10:35, like, we are not those who shrink back to destruction. Yeah. We're not. We have the strength of heaven behind us. Like, we're not those who shrink back. So take courage, my hope. Stay steadfast, my soul. He's in the waiting. He's in the waiting. And hold on to your hope. Watch your triumph unfold. He's never failing. He's never failing. So take courage, my heart. Stay steadfast, my soul.
As a worship leader, I know you take that seriously, but you are literally giving people words to sing in their most desperate moment so often. Like, that's a pretty heavy weight when you're like songwriting. And
I
mean, you want to make sure, first of all, what you're giving them is biblical.
Yeah, yes.
How does that apply to how you construct a song?
It applies greatly. As a younger songwriter, I was always writing from my own personal experiences and my own personal journey. It's not that I don't pull on that today, but a lot more of how I write is in consideration of the people that I lead, mm-hmm. people around me, the people that I find myself around. I say it kind of like this, like when you're at the top of a mountain, you get to the top of this mountain that you're climbing for so long, and you look out at the mountain range around you, and you can see actually all the ways up the other mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And God kind of spoke to me and said, Christine, can you sing other people up their mountains from where you stand? Sing the way up.
Yeah.
Use your words to pull people out of pits and out of dark places. And the thing is that's where my creativity, I felt, exploded, where I was in such a writer's rut for a really, really long time, because my life had come to this place where the only way to know how to explain it is rainbows and butterflies and, you know, all the sunshine. And,
yeah.
And I had come out of this like darker place into this really beautiful place. And I was so very thankful to be there. But then I saw my creativity just shrivel up into, you know, raisins. And
there's so many songs come out of tough places.
It's true. And I don't want to undervalue that. I think writing from your personal experience is good, but it's not it.
Mm-hmm.
If we only believe that, then we're constantly looking for something bad to happen so that we can be creative.
Yeah.
Which I think as Christians, that shouldn't be our expectation. I thought my creativity was dried up. And then God just gave me this whole new perspective of, when you're on top of a mountain, why don't you write all these other people up with your words? They say that being a good songwriter is just saying what everybody else is so desperately trying to say.
Mm.
And so that is what I consider kind of my life call, is to give everybody language for hope that we haven't really even tapped into yet, you know.
That is so true. Like, because when you're in the pit, like sometimes you don't even know what to pray.
No.
And there's a song. I work in Christian radio. I have been for 13 years, but there's so many times like when I'm dealing with crap, that I turn on the station I work for, Way FM, and there's a song that I've heard a bazillion times that just says the word in that moment that I needed
that
to pray,
need.
That I needed to say to God. That song gave me the words to say.
Totally.
Yeah, and I imagine as a worship leader and as a songwriter, like, that's so important, like, because other genres of music or non-faith-based or whatever you want to call it, like, yeah, they may be fun and uplifting and give people hope, but you are literally giving people words to sing in their most desperate moment.
It's definitely a huge responsibility. I know that influence can be heavy and responsibility can be heavy unless you stay close to the Lord, because he carries all of our burdens, you know? So I definitely can feel like the increase of influence in my words, it's kind of this call to just stay even closer to the Lord.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a scary thing to carry that. It's become kind of a delight to me to partner with the Lord in seeing other people set free. I remember being in that really horrible, panic-ridden place in my life and hearing other people's voices and songs pierce through my cloud of doubt and fear, like Nicole C. Mullen, Mary, all these, you know, which—
taking it back to like 2000, I think.
Yeah, no, for real. There's these songs that were kind of unexpected even for me and just gave me just enough strength to wake up in the morning and climb the mountain again.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I want my songs to do that and also bring breakthrough.
Yeah. Bethel is kind of a collection of artists, and this album is too, Starlight. And there are so many different singers on every single song. How, as a collection, has that helped you in your own solo stuff and what you do as a writer?
Oh, it's definitely affected me. They're some of the best writers I've gotten to work with. And so it's definitely reached into me kind of to pull out an even better songwriter, just calling me higher. I feel like that's what we do as a group is we call each other higher. Like, can we reach in and grab more language for that? Can we push it just a little bit further? We have such a value for excellence, but we're not perfectionists. And I think that is something that's really important to understand. Somebody said once that excellence has many acceptable outcomes, but perfectionism only has one.
Yeah.
And so I feel like we sit down as a group and we have different moments of co-writing with each other, and beautiful things come out because we allow each person to be themselves, because that's when you're the most creative, is when you're the most yourself. And I get encouraged. I mean, I tell Amanda all the time, I'm so glad you were born, because I felt everything that she's written that I've heard is, I feel like it's speaking directly to me, and it brings me to life in a way that I've never really experienced. So hearing her creative process and everything that she does really spurs on my own personal creative process. Not in like, I've never felt like I was in competition with anybody. It just felt like what you bring to the table spurs me on to be more myself.
Yeah.
And I've never really experienced that before. It's always been this weird underlying, like, who's better at what?
Yeah.
But it's really this family that encourages each other to be like the very best, you know?
It's a healthy competition, I guess. Yeah?
Yeah, it is. It's like the calling to a standard.
Yeah.
Instead of the calling to perform.
Yeah.
You know?
How does it work like for leading worship on a Sunday? Per se, are you guys kind of just taking different roles in different parts, or is it like, because there are so many people, you're doing the touring and this person's doing leading worship on Sunday? How does this work?
Well, Bethel Church has a huge worship community. So there's over 100 of us. I couldn't give you a solid number of worship leaders, but just to break it down to you, we usually have 3 worship leaders on a Sunday morning, and I probably lead worship once a month.
Okay.
So we have 3 services in the morning on Sunday, and then we have 1 at night, and then we have another one Friday night, and then we have another campus. So we have this other campus where it has 2 services. And if you have 3 worship leaders at each of those services, and you only personally lead one Sunday, we have...
You have a lot.
Yeah, we have a lot. And they're extremely talented and anointed people. Yeah. The Bethel Music Collective is only about 16 of us, I want to say. But that doesn't make up for how many amazing worship leaders we actually have at the church, you know. And it's kind of funny because people from other churches are like, just send one of them, please. You know, we're like, we're trying. We're so trying.
But you're here, so you're touring as well.
Yes.
So, I mean, you're not obviously leading worship.
There is a couple people that make our world go round, and they make sure that the church is covered and that all of our trips and tours are covered.
Yeah.
So we have like we call them our global team. And those are the people that go out and they go on tours. So that's Bethel Music. That's basically what you see more in the public eye. And then we have like our whole community, and those are people that contribute to churches, and we can pull on the musicians and take them on trips with us if need be. There is a couple worship leaders that aren't a part of the collective, the Bethel Music Collective, that do travel with us every now and then. It's a little complicated. Yeah. I get it, but
there's a lot of people involved.
There's a lot of people. What I love about it is when I was a part of other ministries, I just looked at what Bethel Music was doing, and I'm like, this is my home church, and I just want to be a part of the exportation of what God is doing here.
Yeah.
It's not, this is where it's at, and this is the best thing that you could possibly experience, but there's something here, and I just want to give it away.
Well, you've got a husband and 2 kids, so how does that factor into the touring life or the at-home life? I think I read on your Instagram bio you're a homebody who travels the world.
Yeah.
So that doesn't sound like it meshes very well.
No, I know. Just to be really honest, I love being at home. That's my favorite place to be. I travel, and when I'm out there, I enjoy it. But sometimes when there's a trip coming up, I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
And then I get out there and I do it. It's really actually more getting out of my comfort zone to travel than to stay at home. And me and my husband work it out so that everybody feels taken care of and everybody feels loved. And, you know, it's really all about communication, to be honest. So if he's like, well, I really would love you to just not go on that trip, I just don't go on the trip, you know. But he's been the one, since we got married, really pushing me out, because I would prefer to be home. He's like, that is just not fully who you are.
In a good way, pushing you out.
Like, yeah.
No, it, not like, get out of my house.
Get out of here. No. Yeah. No, he's always been extremely supportive of everything that I'm doing. And without that support, I just couldn't do it. My kids are incredible. Now my daughter's 5. And so whenever I go on a trip, she's like, how many sleeps? So I tell her how many sleeps I'll be away. And then she says, I want 2 toys. So my son's kind of, he's only 22 months. He's been with me on everything since he was born up until just recently. And so he's kind of getting used to being home without me for a couple days here and there. But he loves his toys when I come up too.
So are you bringing stuff back every trip for them? Yeah, you have to, right?
Oh, like, yeah, definitely.
Mom rule.
I want the reward to outweigh the sacrifice for them.
Yeah. So what do you normally bring them back? I mean, they're, what, 5 and 22 months. So
yeah, well,
any toy will suffice, I guess.
My son, anything with wheels, planes, trains, cars, he loves anything like that. Anything. My daughter, she's obsessed with the TY Beanie Boos with the big weird eyes. And you know,
I don't have kids. Sorry. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So airports have them by mass quantities.
Well, that's convenient.
Yeah. And I've spent way too much money on them. And her whole bed is just covered in these Beanie Boos. She's drowning in them, but there's still more. They still keep making more. So that's their toys of choice. And I usually bring home like 1 toy per day that I'm gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jumping back into the music, another song on this album, one of my favorites is God, I Look to You, which is is led on Starlight by Francesca Battistelli. But oftentimes you sing this song in worship at church, kind of in conjunction with Take Courage, right?
Yeah. I think it has the same kind of theme.
Yeah.
And so I'll usually lead Take Courage and I'll bring the song down and go into God, I Look to You, which is, it's this idea of lifting up your eyes and looking where your help comes from, basically. Like, I won't be overwhelmed. Give me vision to see things like you do. So in the middle of the mystery and the waiting, God, give me vision to see things like you do. And what I love about God, I Look to You is that it goes immediately into this like high praise kind of hallelujah, our God reigns. Yeah. So in the middle of not really knowing very much and it's dark all around you, you're just declaring over your life and over everything around you, hallelujah, our God reigns, my God reigns, Jesus reigns. It's this beautiful declaration in the middle of the mystery. Hallelujah, our God reigns, oh yes you know. Hallelujah, our God reigns, oh hallelujah, our God reigns, forever my days, hallelujah.
Is it any different leading a song that you didn't write versus one that you did in a church service? I mean, both are beautiful, brilliantly written songs, but is that any different as a, for a worship leader?
Yeah, a little bit. It's funny because you can take ownership of a song when you're leading it if you connect with it. So I try to stay away from leading songs that I don't really connect with, because I feel like when I sing it out, I don't feel as if I'm communicating it rightly, you know? Not because I don't like it. It's just I don't feel like I'm communicating it right. I don't feel like people are going to really grab on like, I believe it too. She doesn't believe it. Yeah. I don't believe it.
Because singing is more than just literally singing the words. You
leadership
have to feel it
is
and believe
different.
It. Yeah.
Like being a worship leader, you're leading people somewhere. And so there is a few songs where I'm like, I don't quite connect with them. It doesn't mean that they're wrong. I just probably won't lead them. But God, I Look to You, I belted out that song to myself in the mirror so many times, you know. I won't be overwhelmed. I refuse, you know. So I think that when I lead that song and then leading Take Courage, there is a similar feeling to it. It's not like I believe Take Courage more than I believe God, I Look to You just because I wrote it. I definitely sing them with the same passion, I guess.
Also, there are so many other artists who have covered Bethel Music songs too. Mm-hmm. Is that cool or is it like, man, I never expected that to happen? What is that like for someone like you? I don't know if anyone's covered specifically a song that you've written, but I know Bethel Music as a whole. How does that make you or the collection feel as a whole? Is that a pretty cool moment?
Yeah, we are totally awesome with that.
Yeah.
It's really cool as a writer to know that, say, another songwriter has connected with your writing.
Yeah.
And enough to want to put it on an album. I mean, that's actually a really big deal. And it's something that we really, really love. I'm like, anytime you want to cover my songs, go for it. Because that just, to me, is this huge compliment of, I really connect with how you wrote that. Mm-hmm. And I want to stick my neck out with you. And that, it kind of feels like that to me.
Because honestly, there are a lot of songs on Christian radio that other artists are singing that came out of Bethel Music or Bethel Church. And they might be sung differently and they might have rearranged them to fit their kind of style of singing, but they still came from Bethel.
Totally.
And that's kind of cool to see,
like,
it expand that way.
We're really okay with it. I know that sometimes, like, people that aren't totally, like, warmed up to Bethel are warmed up to somebody who covers a song. And so we're like, if we can't reach out to a certain demographic of people, but they can.
Yeah,
of course. Like, it doesn't have to be my voice on the song. Like, the message of the song's the same.
It's gotta be cool to see how a song just kind of morphs and takes shape in other areas, but still impacts people the way you intended it to.
Yeah, I love that.
So on your record, Where His Light Was, what's the story behind this song? It's not on Starlight, but it's on your record.
Yeah, the title track, I wrote it in 2006. It's funny because I've submitted it for albums over and over and over again. It just never landed. And Take Courage being kind of this wrap up of 10 years of my life of really learning to trust the Lord. Whereas Light Was kind of speaks to looking back in a remembrance sort of way, not in like a weird, I'm attached to my past in a really unhealthy way sort of way, you know, but looking back and seeing the fact that even when you thought you were walking through darkness alone and all that stuff, when you look back, you see your path just completely lit up with the fact that the Lord was with you the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
C.S. Lewis has this quote, I'm going to paraphrase it, where it says, when we get to heaven, we'll look back and see that it was all heaven, kind of as if the grace of God kind of works in reverse and makes beautiful everything we thought was ugly and hard. And so the idea of the album and the idea of the title track is just that, like, never an orphan, never without him. Looking back now, I see where his light was. Ever before me, ever behind me, looking back now, I see where his light was. You know, when they say hindsight is 20/20,
yeah,
it's kind of like that.
Absolutely.
When I look back, now I see where his hand was in this whole thing. It's trying to give language to hope in the midst of the mystery and the waiting.
Yeah, it kind of goes along with Take Courage, which is also, you were saying, the radio version is on this album too.
It is on this album. It's a bunch of my songs that I feel lend themselves to this message.
Never an orphan, never without him. Looking back now, I see.
Christine, thank you so much for being here.
I'm so glad
you took the time to talk about these songs and share the stories behind Starlight and Where His Light Was. Thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the More Than the Music podcast, episode 55, featuring Christine DeMarco from Bethel Music. If you love the show, which if you've made it this far, I'm guessing that you do, would you consider sharing it with your friends on social media? Because any Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram share only helps more people hear the amazing stories behind these songs. I also love hearing from you. You're welcome to email me anytime at justin@wayfm.com or just leave me a 5-star rating and review inside iTunes. Glory Revealed 7 recently left this review. I like the authenticity of the artists. I like the fact that everyone is transparent. Transparency is lost in my opinion today. Blessings, and I'm looking forward to listening to more. Thank you so much for your review. If you want to connect with the show, find links to my Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, and have a chance to win Bethel Music Starlight that was featured in this episode, just go to wayfm.com/Justin.